The distance from my little town to the City of Lights, Las Vegas, is about 100 miles. 2 hours of driving through a ribbon of asphalt flanked by sparse flora and the cacti guardians of the timeless Mojave Desert. Though, as Einstein said, time is relative, and you'll feel it in the equation of the crimson sunsets on this desert drive. Time bends and stretches depending on your frame of reference, the motions, the vibes, the company you keep, or the music you play. And that crimson sunset at the end of summer, time felt relatively slower, driving my old Chevy truck on our way to the City of Lights and Sins. We drove to the Forbidden City without a plan, as usual. No plan is the best plan, and the most fun, I think. That's what we both agreed on, in a non-verbal way, which is the best way we communicate. As if we had a secret code, one that's never been established. A silence that speaks on its own, in gestures, in the chemistry of our bodies. A silence we don't need to interpret, nor understand. It's the kind of language that doesn't need translation. A language built on the simplest things. A glance, a smile, the way she rubs her fingers, or when she plays a song for me. And if there's ever a need for words to express a feeling, we use references. Cheap, poorly constructed metaphors that make sense only to us. Like that gas station looks so empty, or pay attention to the road. There's no better form of intimacy than the kind that doesn't intrude, the one that doesn't claim to understand the other, when we don't even understand ourselves. We are past those trifles. We can just be together in the privacy of our loneliness, alone with each other. But the reality of not having a plan for our trips, whether short or long, is perhaps more mundane, more simple. We've objectively proven, better than the theory of relativity, that after a few drinks, all plans or equations don't matter, and the real fun begins. It's more exciting this way. We create the night as it goes, as if we were crafting our own story, driving through the Mojave Desert, checking into the hotel, or exchanging cheap metaphors on our way to the room, like, that painting is so pretty, or I hope I packed my toothbrush. The room had a beautiful view of the city, with its lights twinkling like stars trapped in the gravity force of the streets. The room was just the right temperature, with the gentle hum of the air conditioner keeping things comfortable. After finally settling in, we felt like we always feel when we enter a hotel room, like we should just stay there, as if this little corner of the world could become our own. The view, so stunning, made me think for a moment that perhaps we could. But after a few shots of Grey Goose, our favorite vodka, that familiar feeling took hold. We felt like we always do after two strong ones, comfortable, a little lightheaded, but suddenly, the room, the city, the entire world outside the window felt too small for us. We had two more drinks after that, but mixed with cranberry juice this time. Small changes like this, in the game of living, loving, and drinking, are very important, vital, even. They usually go unnoticed, but make no mistake, such minimal changes are key to surviving the unyielding drudgeries crawling through every inch of our human affairs, and the key to unlock the mysteries of a night in Las Vegas. "Let's go dance at a club we've never been to before," she said, while sipping the red blend of vodka and juice. "Let's have some fun tonight." And it wasn't a cheap metaphor this time. It was a declaration of war to her own insides, to whatever thoughts she held, thoughts I would never have access to, nor would I ever dare. My recollection of how we ended up at the Zouk nightclub, located at Resorts World, after those last two glasses of Cape Codder, which is the fancy name for cranberry juice and vodka, is blurry, inconclusive, and conveniently meaningless. But somehow we ended up there, under the strobe lights that made everyone look like they were part of a movie about a club in Las Vegas, a scene too surreal to feel real. It was a cathedral of laser lights, with the thundering bump of the bass and the mingling smell of alcohol and juice. Despite my fleeting, already poisoned memory at that point, I would never forget the moment I saw Kiana, a 23-year-old Hawaiian exotic dancer, because time again became relatively slow, or perhaps completely stopped. Her look was brighter than all the lights in the City of Lights. She moved with a hypnotic defiance, carrying the cadence of the islands in the sway of her hips. Her clear, piercing eyes were the last thing I noticed, though I was already a little drunk and far too blinded by the cinnamon glow of her skin shimmering under the fragmented light. However, I hadn't forgotten that I came with someone. Someone who isn't just anyone. She's dear to me. She is my companion. But to my great fortune, while weaving through the pulsing crowd together, she leaned in close and said, "I think I'm going on a side quest," with a flashing, mischievous smile, which was our cheap metaphor for, "I'll meet you by the ladies' room in 2 hours." I took it as a sign of what my friend Victor, and countless others who have no clue how physics or the universe truly operate, like to call the universe. And so, with the kind of boldness that only 2 Cape Codders and a cathedral of laser lights can inspire, I went to meet Kiana. But I had to operate quickly. 2 hours is a short time. Because even if sometimes we go on our own side quests, for whatever reason, we'll always find a way back to each other, whether it's in this club, or in our small towns 2 relative hours away, or at the other side of the aforementioned universe. Because I, too, don't have the faintest idea of how the laws of physics or the universe work, but I know this, and she knows it even better. I'll be there at the entrance of the ladies' room in 2 hours. And so, being acutely aware I had no time to lose, I walked straight to where Kiana stood, surrounded by her group of friends, 4 stunning dancers clad in provocative short dresses that seemed to steal the glow and breath of everyone around them. They exuded an aura, as if they belonged not to real life but to the glossy pages of magazines, to perfectly edited, photoshopped images. Yet, despite their bewitching allure, Kiana's beauty was something else entirely, something far beyond all of that. I said, "My name is Jella," offering a small, almost casual wave with my hand. "Oh, let me guess, Mr. Jella," she replied, with a teasing smile curling at the edges of her lips. "You want to buy me a drink, don't you?" And she smiled again dismissively, as if she had already heard that punchline countless times, countless nights before. I smiled back, but there was something softer in my reply. "No, I don't want to buy you a drink, at least not just yet," and I paused for a second. "I could buy you a drink, but the word want implies that it's my desire, as if I'm eager to do so. That would be a misinterpretation of the course of action." She studied me for a moment with her clear, piercing eyes, and then she just leaned into me, rested her hand on my chest, bursting into a warm, melodic laugh. It was a laugh that seemed to erase the space between us, drawing me in, softening everything in the air around us. "I saw you earlier," she said, "with someone. Did you lose her?" "She's a little lost in general," I replied, a smirk playing on my lips. "Just like all of us, I guess." Her laughter lingered and her cheeks turned into a soft shade of rose. In that instant, her demeanor shifted. There was something more tender now, something familiar, as if we were no longer strangers at all. Or better said, as if we knew each other from far before. From that moment, we bypassed the tedious small talk, the forced interest in each other's daily affairs, and instead, we allowed ourselves to drift into a flow of conversation. Topics came and went without urgency, unrestrained, as the drinks kept coming, as the fiery attraction between us burned through the haze of laser lights and pounding music. There was magic in the way we spoke, the way we connected. We laughed, we leaned closer, and I kissed her as if each kiss might be the last, as if the world around us might vanish in an instant. For 2 hours, nothing existed outside of us. Time stopped, relatively speaking. But then I told her I needed to go. She looked at me, not surprised, but with a mix of sadness and something else, perhaps understanding. "She's lucky," she said softly. "No," I replied, "I'm the lucky one." She smiled with kindness and asked, "Do you want my number?" I paused for a moment, but I just said, "Goodbye, beautiful." In this case, her use of the word want fit perfectly within the bounds of semantics and syntax. I wanted her number, but I also knew I would never call or text. My heart cracked for a moment before reaching the entrance to the ladies' room. I thought about Kiana, about her piercing clear eyes and the urge to go back to her, to spend more time together. But those were just drunk regrets, things that now belong to the library of memories I like to revisit when I'm alone or driving or walking through the bathroom halls of the Zouk nightclub in Las Vegas. I made it there in time, though, as always. but she wasn't there yet. That was normal. After the usual 5-minute wait, she appeared, gently and drunk. I felt relief. It's that simple feeling of comfort, found in the most overlooked simple things, like drinking a glass of fresh water after a night of drinking, or returning to your small town after a wild weekend in Las Vegas. She felt the same way. That smooth domestic comfort reflected in her eyes. She simply hooked her arm through mine and walked with me out of the club. "I missed home for a minute in there," she said. Another metaphor. The events that followed our departure from the aforementioned Zouk nightclub at the world-class resort blur in memory, though they include, but are not limited to, a quiet midnight stop for burgers and fries at In-N-Out, a fleeting visit to a midget strip club, and a limousine ride that cost $20, $25 with the tip. None of these moments can be recalled with perfect clarity, but what stays with me, what lingers, is that, somehow, we made it back to the hotel room, together. Back in the room, we sat together at the edge of the bed, feeling good and tired, as if we had just accomplished something. We talked about the club, the music, the lights, the mischief, and used metaphors to describe our drunk feelings, because of course we wouldn't dare speak directly, drunk or not. It had been a great night. But then, after a small silence, and for the first time in the many years we've known each other, she dared to ask me a direct question. "Why didn't you stay with her?" she said softly. "The pretty girl at the club, I watched you. I always do. You looked so happy with her. Why did you choose me over her? Why do you always choose me? I don't understand." It caught me off guard. We don't speak to each other like that. I didn't know what to say right away. I looked down, searching for a metaphor, something simple, beautiful, that could capture the essence of our unique relationship. Something about the meaning of true companionship, about how impossible it is to find someone who can accept you without demands, who can be with you without intrusion. Someone who is capable of just enjoying your presence. But all I managed was, "Because I care for you." It came from my heart, a simple truth that summarized all the complications between us, all that we never said to each other but had expressed in so many ways. "Because I care for you," I said. But when I turned my head to look for her eyes, she had already passed out, drunk. I carefully took off her small shoes and tucked her gently under the white sheets of the bed. As I did, my thoughts wandered to Kiana. Maybe she was still there at the club. I thought about how I had just abandoned her in that cathedral of laser lights, loud music, and alcohol and juice. Still lost in these thoughts, I adjusted her head on the pillow, the way she liked, and placed another pillow under her arm, because she loved sleeping that way. Then, with her eyes still closed, she whispered, "Hey, tough guy, I care for you too."